for being with us, Joe.
You're welcome. My pleasure. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I am very excited about you teaching us about Ho'oponopono, and for many, this is going to be information that is new and startling. So can you start with telling us about how you were introduced to Ho'oponopono and what you first thought about it?
I first heard the story, the most amazing, bizarre, incredible, unbelievable story about 3 years ago. It could have been 3.5 years ago at this point. I was at a convention, and a friend of mine sitting beside me said, had you heard about the therapist in Hawaii who healed an entire ward of mentally ill criminals, and he never saw any of them? He never worked with them one-on-one. And I love my friend, but I looked at him with my eyes coming out of the corner of my head and thought, you know what, I think you bought an urban legend. I don't think that's possible. I'm pretty open-minded. I know about remote healing. I know magic and miracles happen on a pretty routine basis in the world. But to heal an entire ward of criminally ill patients, inmates in a mental hospital, and not deal with them directly just sounded preposterous. It just sounded incredible. So I wisely dismissed it. I was a skeptic, and I thought, this isn't true, and I didn't explore it for an entire year. And then 1 year later, at the same convention, same friend said, hey, did you ever go look up that therapist? And I thought, okay, that's it. I'm going to go and do the research right now. And we left the convention. We took a laptop. And we started exploring. We could find very little information at that point. But the bug had been set within my skin, and I started to look. I became a detective. And I did find that the story was, in fact, true. I did find that the therapist was still alive. He no longer worked for the mental hospital. In fact, the ward that he worked in was closed because he had helped heal every one of the inmates, and they were all pronounced normal and healthy and were released. So the story began to get even more captivating to me and more incredible. I ended up finding the therapist. I ended up interviewing him. I ended up going to workshops with him. I've ended up bringing him to my home. We've done workshops together. We're going to be doing another one soon. And we co-authored a book on this whole thing, and the book is called Zero Limits. And in the book, I narrate the whole journey, everything from me hearing the story and being disbelieving of it to finding the therapist. And his name is Dr. Hu Len. Dr. Hu Len was a classically trained traditional psychotherapist, and he found that that method wasn't working, and he was always butting heads with patients who were just not changing with the traditional route. And he learned what was called self-identity Ho'oponopono. And that's specific because it's very different from another branch of Ho'oponopono that's out there. So self-identity Ho'oponopono is from Hawaii. It's all about personal responsibility. It's all about changing others and the world by only changing yourself, because in many ways, the others and the world are a projection of what's inside of you. So it's all focused on total responsibility. It's all focused on love. It's all focused on forgiveness. And Dr. Hu Len learned the method, taught it to others, and that's the method he used to heal that entire ward of mentally ill criminals. So I went from being a disbelieving skeptic to being an evangelist for this thing, co-author of this thing, and I'm telling the world about it because it is so easy to do, yet so miraculous in its results. So there's the Cliff Notes version of the story.
We'll still buy the book, though, because nothing's good. Joe, I want to talk a little bit about this concept of taking responsibility. Mm. I find that it's hard enough sometimes to take responsibility for our own lives. And here with Ho'oponopono, it's saying to take responsibility for everything around you. How do you get your head around that?
That is the biggest mind stretch of all. And that was the thing that I had the hardest time at first getting my mind around. And I admit, even today, I still do from time to time, but so does Dr. Hu Len. He will openly admit he's been doing this for 25 years. But the natural egoic tendency is that when something goes wrong, you want to blame somebody else. It's so much easier to do that. You just point a finger and say, well, it's because of the president, it's because of the terrorists, it's because of, you know, your neighbors, your family, the way you were born, your DNA. You just blame something else, and suddenly you feel a little better because you're off the hook. Well, that's not how it works in self-identity Ho'oponopono. In this Hawaiian method of healing, you take total responsibility. My way of explaining this is I always point out to people, that they've probably heard the phrase, you create your own reality. It's big in the human potential, new agey movement. It's big among people who are trying to make a difference in their lives, the more conscious folks. So they've heard, you create your own reality. Well, Dr. Hulen says the same thing, only he says, if a mentally ill criminal is in front of you and you create your own reality, that person's in your reality. You created that person. He just takes the very statement to the logical conclusion. If you create your own reality, anything that is in your awareness is something you created. That's how he explains it, and that's how I convey it to others. Now, it's still a head-turner. I mean, you still get whiplash of the brain when you consider this, because it's now saying that if somebody cuts you off in traffic, somebody gives you a hard time at work, you have a relationship problem, a neighbor problem, a city government, whatever it happens, whatever the problem is, if it's in your awareness, if that awareness is there and you've got that problem in your awareness, you helped create it. There it is. That's the bottom line, and there's no way around it. If you're going to take total responsibility for your life, whatever is in your life, good, bad, or indifferent, you helped create it. And the only way to change what you are complaining about is not to change the outer, is to change the inner. You do all of the work within you. My example with Dr. Hulen in that mental hospital in Hawaii is that he did not go up to patients and try to change them directly. He rarely even saw them. He did see them at lunches, and they did have recreational activities, so over time he got to see them. But what he did basically was sit in his office and review their charts. And as he looked at their charts, he was reading charts about murderers and rapists and violent criminals that were doing dastardly things that would repulse most of us. Well, whatever he felt, whether it was repulsion or anger or guilt or shame or, you know, whatever that emotion was, he did not go to the patient and try to change them. He looked within himself and tried to erase, that's the term he uses, he tries to erase that feeling, the feeling of repulsion, the feeling of anger, the feeling of shame, whatever it is in him, that's what he's trying to erase. As he erases it within him, here's where the magic happens. The patient gets better.
Wow. And how does he erase it? I mean, talk about the process.
Yeah. Well, it's the most fascinating thing because it's so simple. He is basically first taking full responsibility for everything that's in his life. So that's the bottom line fundamental concept. It's total responsibility. And the second thing he's doing is he's asking what he calls the divine to erase it and clear it within him. Now, some people will use the term God. Some people will say Gaia. Some people will say nature. I think all of us, even the more atheistic, believe that there is some sort of power that we're part of. For Dr. Hulen, he calls it the divine, and I use the phrase the divine in the book Zero Limits. It seems more neutral and politically correct. It has less of a charge on it than even God does. But he's taking his request and his petition and his feelings to the divine. It's very much a reverent, prayerful petition. So he's feeling, we'll say anger. He's looking at the chart and he's just repulsed and he's angry. And so he knows that's the feeling in him that is actually being created in the mentally ill patient. He's taking full responsibility for what he's seeing and feeling. So what he does is address the divine. It's very prayerful. He's looking skyward. He's looking to what he thinks the divine is at. And he's saying things like, please forgive me, thank you, I love you, and I'm sorry. Those are the four key phrases. Please forgive me, thank you, I love you, I'm sorry. Now, what does that mean? What is he actually doing? He's basically saying, please forgive me because I have been totally unaware of the programming within me that has created this person, this thing that I'm upset about, these feelings. In Dr. Hulen's world, in the Ho'oponopono world, we are almost all unconscious. We have no idea what our beliefs are, our programmings are. They're in our unconscious mind. We have a lot of baggage that we were born with and a lot of programming that we were downloaded from birth on up to this moment. So there's all kind of stuff that's going on in our unconscious. He doesn't know what part of him, what beliefs in him, what programming in him created that patient and what he did. So he's saying, please forgive me. I'm sorry. I have not been aware. I do not know what part of me contributed to this, but whatever it is, please erase it. And then he's saying thank you, because thank you is such a powerful statement of gratitude. All by itself, it starts to move you into love. It starts to move you into a different vibe. And he's thanking the divine for taking care of this. And more often than not, he ends with, I love you. You can say the statements in any order. I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, and thank you. But I think more often than not, he ends up, and I end up when I do this, saying I love you as my ending statement. Because when I get to the place of truly feeling love, and I have that awareness of my connection to divinity in that statement of I love you, at that point, I am washing myself clean of anything in the way of me feeling love in the moment. So he basically is doing this repeatedly, nonstop, with everything that comes up in his life. That's the process. As simple as it sounds, that's the transformative ritual, if you will, that causes such a miracle as mentally ill criminals being healed in a mental institution with a doctor who's not even working with them direct.
That's incredible. And if he can do that with other people, imagine what we could do with our own lives.
And that's it. Ever since Zero Limits has come out, the book, and now there's audios of the book, and of course I do seminars with Dr. Hulen, and he does seminars on his own. He's still very active traveling around doing this. People are reporting the most amazing stories. I mean, instead of head-on trying to change their partner in a relationship, you know, traditionally that's what you do. You go to counseling or you learn better communication techniques, and you try this, that, and the other. Instead of doing any of that, the people reading Zero Limits will sit down, feel what they're feeling, and they might be angry at their partner, and they're feeling it, and then they just go through the process of talking to the divine, their connection to God, and saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, while they're aware of their feelings and while they're aware of their partner. And when they come out of it, more often than not, and this happens very rapidly, the other person changes. Now, whether the other person is changing as a response to your own change, or the other person is changing because what you did within yourself caused the divine to do something within them, I don't know how to explain that sort of magic that's taking place. I just know the results are real. So I'm at the level, for me, I do this nonstop. It's my new self-talk. And this is something I always try to point out to people, is that most of us have self-talk that's very critical, very condemning, very negative. And if our best friends talk to us the way we talk to ourselves in our own head, we'd kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But we allow ourselves to get that, allow that self to go on. And instead, what I've done is, to the best of my ability, is to replace the self-talk with, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And I'm doing it even now as you and I converse.
Wow. So I know that you're in the film Tried on Everything about EFT.
Yeah.
And you also have a lot of different, I mean, your book, The Attractor Factor, has, you know, five principles?
It's five steps to creating what you want, yes.
Five steps to creating what you want. How does all of this fit into Ho'oponopono, or does it?
Yeah, oh, it does. It absolutely does. I'm glad you asked that question. In the book, The Attractor Factor, I describe the five-step formula for attracting anything into your life. And the third step is about getting clear. And this is what I call the missing secret to making everything work. People talk about the law of attraction. They talk about the secret. They talk about all these books that are out there. And there's a whole movement that loves that, but there's also a whole movement that hates it because they say it doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work, or it doesn't seem to work, when you're not clear. And what I mean by that is, in my book, The Attractor Factor, in the movie, The Secret, and you hear it all over the place, they all talk about stating intentions. I'm a great believer in stating an intention. You intend to lose weight. You intend to track money. You intend to have a better relationship. You intend to have better health. Those are all well and good. But if you have what I call a counter intention within you, you will block it from happening. You will self-sabotage yourself. You will try, like the Dickens, to bring in the money or the health or whatever it happens to be, and you'll throw up your hands saying, it just doesn't work for me. Well, step three in The Attractor Factor is about getting clear. How do you get clear of these counter intentions? How do you get clear of these negative beliefs, these limitations? That's when you use EFT. That's when you use Ho'oponopono. That's when you use anything in your bag of tricks to help you get rid of the counter intention within you. A good example is when people say, I intend to attract money. Well, good. Nothing wrong with that. But if they have in their unconscious mind the belief, the counterintention, that money's bad, money's evil, money will corrupt me, rich people are bad, rich people are snobbies, the taxes will come and take all of my money, family and friends will come and take all of my money. Well, you can have a wonderful intention about money and attracting it, and it's not going to bring money into your world if you have all of these counter intentions in you. Those counter intentions need tapped away. That's what needs cleared. So EFT, Ho'oponopono, all of this are, in fact, those are the two most powerful tools I know of to get clear when you're not getting the results you want. Those two techniques right there, EFT and Ho'oponopono, are the ones that are in my back pocket all day long. I'm tapping behind the wheel of a car when I'm driving. I'm doing Ho'oponopono all day long, even as I'm doing it now with you. I mean, those are my two most powerful techniques. I have all kinds that I've talked about. I've recorded The Missing Secret that has seven techniques in it. I wrote the book The Key that has 10 clearing techniques in it. But my two favorite, the two I lean on, the two I teach people, the two I talk about in all my seminars are EFT and Ho'oponopono.
Wow. So, you know, from my understanding, you've had a shift in your beliefs where before people look at things as like setting goals and figuring out what you want beforehand, before you do the clearing. How has that shifted?
I'm much more in favor of what I call inspired intentions. I, of course, beforehand believed in intentions, and I know intentions are powerful. When you say you're going to do something, you've stated a goal, you've stated an outcome, you've stated an intention for your life, you realign your body and mind to go in the direction of that intention. That still works. The problem with it is it's usually based on limitations. It's based on your ego. It's based on what you believe is possible, and that's based on what you've seen in the past. So it's not allowing the greatness and the miracles that could come into your life because it's based on limitations perceived in this moment. My new way of looking at this, and I call it allowing inspired intentions, is that when the divine gives me an intention, it usually is startlingly bigger, more majestic, more miraculous than what my ego ever would have came up with.
Right.
To give you a quick example that comes to mind, formerly an intention might be, well, I want to have my next book be a bestseller. Well, nothing wrong with that. That's a fine intention. But there's something that could be bigger than that if Joe's ego got out of the way. An inspired intention, which came to me within the last year, is to actually start this movement to end homelessness. And I've started it. It's called Operation Yes. Yes stands for Your Economic Salvation. And I want to teach people who are either about to be foreclosed or they've already happened and they might be on the streets. I want to teach them EFT to help improve their self-worth, because I was homeless at one point. I know what you feel like. You feel like a victim. You feel vulnerable. You feel worthless. You have no hope in yourself, no hope in your future. You just feel like nothing's going to work out ever again. And so I want to teach EFT to help people redeem themselves and to build their self-esteem and self-confidence. And I want to go on and teach Ho'oponopono to help them clear anything within them that was causing what they were receiving. And then I want to go on and teach them the entrepreneurial mindset, because that'll give them empowerment and freedom. And I'm putting together a team of people to do this. Well, Operation Yes is way out of Joe's ego. This is something that is so much bigger than what I ever imagined before that I can only say this was an inspired intention that was given to me as a gift from the divine. So there's a difference right there. An ego intention might be something for me to be rewarded by, and it would be self-serving. And that's fine. You can go through life and have a wonderful time doing that. But a bigger, more magical way of going through life is to have the intentions come from the divine itself, what I call inspired intentions. Then you live a life of exhilaration, of moment-by-moment magic and miracles, and you have the divine on your side supporting you in creating this awe.
Well, Joe, you just mentioned getting people out of the victim mentality.
Yeah.
And I read that you believe there's three stages in life. The victim, the creator of life, and the servant to the divine. Can we go through each one?
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, in fact, there's a fourth stage. I just recently came out with an audio program called The Awakening Course. And in the Awakening Course, I go through all four of these stages. The three that you're referring to are the first three that are in the Awakening Course. Those are in the book Zero Limits. I didn't know about the fourth stage and did not have personal experience with it when I wrote Zero Limits, so it's not in that book. But in the Awakening Course, yes, I talk about all four stages, and the first one is victimhood. We are all born into it. I mean, there might be one or two enlightened exceptions to it, but across the board, we are born into this state of mind of feeling like a victim. We are dependent on everybody else. We're dependent on our parents to feed us and clothe us and change us and so forth. And we are being downloaded information from birth, most of which is concerned about survival. It is not teaching us to thrive. It is teaching us to survive. So we are learning very quickly to be afraid, to be concerned about security. And we're learning this from our family, our friends, our educational system, the media, the government, religion, all of it. And it's not doing it with any evil intent. It is doing it to help you survive. So we are brought up into the world. We go into adulthood feeling like victims, and the vast majority go to our graves feeling like that. Hopefully, at some point, something comes along, and it could be something like an interview like this. It could be a radio show. It could be a book. It could be movies. Lots of movies are coming out these days with a message of empowerment, like The Secret does. There's a new movie called The Compass that I'm in that just came out. Gives you that feeling of empowerment. Any of this can help awaken you from that first stage and put you in the second stage. The second stage is empowerment. The second stage is when you start to feel you have power. You start to feel you can do things in the world, that you have more control, more power, more opportunity than you ever thought before. This is a wonderful stage. It's an exhilarating stage. It's a freeing stage. You're out of the prison now. You're no longer a victim. You can set intentions and you can see them come about, and you can meet other people who are doing the same thing, and your energy goes up and your life gets better. However, at a certain point, you realize you ain't God and you can't have everything. You will set intentions, you will practice everything you learn in the Secret and The Compass and my books and everybody else's books, and you'll keep running into a particular block in a particular area. And at some point, you might even say, oh, this doesn't work anymore. But if you're really wise and the thing works for you because of a story, because of a book, because of an insight of some sort, you'll realize you have to surrender. And that's stage three. You surrender. You're surrendering your weakness. And I don't mean that in a negative way. What you've discovered is that you're not God, and you're now surrendering to God. You're surrendering to the divine. You still live a life of empowerment. You're not a victim, but now you're joining forces with the divine, and you are surrendering to its will. I wrote a book on P.T. Barnum, and most people don't know he was a very spiritual man. On his tombstone, it had his motto. It said, "Not my will, but thine be done." That's where you're at in stage three. It's very much a zero limits stage. It's very much where you're realizing everything that's going on in your life is your creation. You've co-created it with the divine. You are responsible for it. And if you're trying to make any changes there, you don't do it by wrestling the world to the ground. You do it by surrendering your will to the divine and co-creating resolutions and solutions. So step three, stage three that I talk about in the Awakening Course, and it's mentioned in Zero Limits, is surrender. But there's one more stage.
This is an exclusive. I'm excited. I haven't heard this one yet.
Yeah, there's one more stage, and that stage only comes by grace. The first three stages, you can do something to make them happen. When you're in a victimhood mentality, again, you can read The Attractor Factor. You can watch The Secret. You can do EFT. You can do all kind of different things, and you can awaken from that, and you can go into empowerment, and you can stay in empowerment for the rest of your life and have a pretty good time. But at some point, if you're lucky, you read Zero Limits, or you hear this interview, something comes along, and you awaken to the idea that you aren't in charge of the planet. Like, we've been in a drought in Texas here for a while. I can't go make it rain. I can pray for it to rain. I can do all kind of rituals and cleanings and so forth, but I'm not in charge of the lever that pulls rain. So I got to surrender. Now, all of these can happen because of a story, because of an insight, but the fourth stage only comes by grace, and that grace comes from the divine itself, And that's when you awaken to the reality that you are the divine. There's no separation. In that fourth stage, it is not an intellectual concept to say, oh, I am of God, or I am of the divine, or I am one. It's not an intellectual. If you're saying that, you're still in surrender or even empowerment. In the fourth stage, you have become the divine. Or to say it more accurately, you're gone, and only the divine is breathing through you. That's the awakening. That's the fourth stage.
Now, with these four stages, is someone in each four stage, or do you kind of go through each stage, even throughout the day? Because I look at this and I go, well, I've definitely felt the creator of my life, and then sometimes I've gone back to the victim, and then
yes.
I've gone up
yeah.
again. So tell us about, what do we expect? How does this all work?
Yeah, that's a great question. You go up and down the scale. You go through the first three stages up and down until you become more and more conscious. My rule of thumb is life is nothing but a journey to awakening. We're only here to awaken, and we are at various degrees of that. I mentioned I was homeless 30-some years ago, and I was in poverty for the longest time. Well, the guy who was homeless is not the same guy who's talking to you, even though his name was Joe Vitale, too. I have changed so dramatically. I have awakened from the programming and the scarcity consciousness and everything that was in that person who was on the streets in Dallas to become this person who is now in 11 movies and has 30 books and has been on Larry King and Donnie Doing, to the whole long line of different things. That only happens from awakening, and you just keep awakening. You go through these stages until you've cleaned it enough that you're no longer a victim. You are now in empowerment, and you're in there long enough until you've cleaned that enough, and now you're into surrender. And you stay in there surrendering to the divine, doing your petition, doing your cleaning, your EFT, your Ho'oponopono, until one day, and again, this is by grace, the divine awakens within you. And you're not there, but the divine is breathing and living and speaking through you. Otherwise, we're sliding up and down the scale of those first three. In the morning, you might be a victim. In the afternoon, you remember, oh yeah, I don't need to be a victim. I can set goals, you know, and in the later evening, you might go, what was I doing setting goals? I'm supposed to be talking to the divine. And you go up and down those until you become conscious enough that they start to drop off. But I think this is our work. This is our work as human beings to realize we're really spiritual beings having a human experience. But because we're human, we just attach to the human. We think it's all, you know, gloom and doom and struggle and strife and dark clouds that we have to wrestle and dragons we have to fight. And that's not the reality. But we don't know that until we awaken from that dream.
Right, and I think it's also about appreciating the stage that we're in as well.
Oh, gosh, that's such a biggie. You know, the movie The Compass that I've mentioned that is out, and it's at thecompass.tv if anybody gets curious to go look at the trailer. There's three or four standout stories in it, and I'm lucky enough to have one of them. And the one standout story is where I tell the story of the pencil, and it's worth mentioning it to you, at least in a shorthand version of it. Years ago, decades ago, when I was struggling, I was working on myself. I was going to the library. I didn't have money, but I could take books out, and I was reading them. I would go to lectures at different churches, Unity churches, Science of Mind, so forth, and I kept hearing about gratitude. Gratitude was the thing that would change my life, so they told me. And I thought, yeah, I will be grateful when I have a car. I will be grateful when I have money. I will be grateful when I have a job. I'll be grateful when I have a relationship. I'll be grateful when fill in the blank. But I kept hearing, no, that's not how it works. You have to be grateful now. You have to be grateful for what you have. And I'd wrestle with that, thinking, I don't have anything to be grateful for. Being upset about it. And finally, I thought, okay, I'm going to play this game. And I looked around. All I could find was a pencil. And I picked up the pencil, and I just kind of flippantly said, okay, I guess with this leaded thing, I can write a suicide note. And then I thought, well, I guess I could write a grocery list. And then, well, I softened and thought, well, I can write a, you know, the great American novel. I can write a love letter. I can write poetry. I can write a song, you know, and I started to feel grateful. I started to think, wow, this twig, this piece of wood with a lead on it, I can actually move the earth. I can write affirmations for myself. I can write intentions. I can write visualizations. I can write scripts. And I moved into this energy of, wow, this is quite the invention. And then I flipped the pencil over, and there's this incredible device called an eraser. And I can erase the suicide note. I can erase the bad words in a song or, you know, inappropriate poetry, whatever it happens to be. And I ended up moving into this spirit of true gratitude for a pencil. And that opened me up. It opened my internal awareness. Instead of being so skeptical, so closed down, so flippant, I started to open up. The window to life opened up because I was grateful for that pencil. Now, today, I have a country estate. I have a car collection, guitar collection. I get in a hot tub almost every night, and I'm under the Texas sky looking at the stars, and I say, thank you. Thank you for my life. Thank you for everything I have. But it all started with me being grateful for a pencil. And I think that's the turning point for all of us, that we can actually flip a switch within us to move into a higher state of awareness and consciousness. And even from a law of attraction standpoint, if you're in a spirit of gratitude in this moment, you're sending out a signal to attract more moments to match it, more moments to feel grateful. So I think gratitude and thankfulness from sincerity in the moment is the single most powerful thing any of us can do, and we can do it right now, and we can do it for free. Nobody's charging you for this. It's amazing.
It's true. Now, in terms of Ho'oponopono, when we do look at our life and we see a problem, we label something like a problem, what does that actually represent?
All it means is that there's a block, a programming, a limitation within you. It doesn't mean anything more than that. I mean, we're going to give it meaning. We're going to say it's really awful, or we're going to judge it in some way that will actually make it worse. But Dr. Hulin has said many times, have you ever noticed if there's a problem that you are there?
Yes.
And it sounds so simple and so funny, but the point is, the only reason it's perceived as a problem is that you're there observing it and judging it as a problem. So if you can detach from it a little bit and realize, I don't know where it came from. In Dr. Hulin's world, we don't create things consciously. We create them unconsciously. And our unconscious mind is so deep, so rich, with so many programs from his world, that these programs come all the way back, go all the way back to when we were amoeba. And we go through all these generations bringing in DNA and all this genetics and epigenetics and all this other scientific stuff that's being found that's within us. We don't have a clue. We don't have a freaking clue what part of us created the problem. All we know is it's in my awareness. I have to take responsibility for it. So please forgive me. I'm sorry. Thank you. And I love you until the thing's gone.
I love in the book how I'm not sure if it was you or Dr. Hulin who said it, but that patterns come up again, you know, problems and patterns come up because it's giving us another opportunity to clear it.
That's exactly right. Yes, and I think that came from him. In The Attractor Factor, I have the line where I say, when you get the lesson from the experience, you no longer need the experience. A lot of people will have reoccurring issues in their life, like somebody will be doing fine with money and finances and job, but their relationships are always terrible. Or somebody else is doing fine with their relationship, but they always have money problems. There seems to be a unique problem or a unique area where they always seem to have a reoccurring pattern. And what I'm saying is, as soon as you get the lesson from that particular area, it goes away. It's only reoccurring because it's trying to get your attention. And as you clean it with EFT, self-identity, Ho'opono, whatever way works for you, as you release that, the lesson is there, the learning is there, it is gone, and you will never have to experience it again.
Can you talk a little bit about free will and free won't?
It's one of the most confusing sections in the book, but one of the most amazing, insightful, breakthrough messages. And it's the whole idea that we don't really have free will. There was a scientist, Benjamin Levitt, I think was his name, and he wrote a book I believe was called Mind Travel. I forget the exact title. Mind Science, I forget the exact title, but he did all of these experiments on the brain, and he found out that when we decide to do something, now imagine this, you decide you're going to reach over and pick up a book. He said the conscious decision to do that didn't come first, that the trigger for it was actually unconscious, that he observed that in the unconscious mind, the brain was firing a signal, and then you consciously said, oh, I guess I'll go reach for this book. And you think you came up with that as a decision. you think that was your free will. But his research shows that that was not the case at all, that it actually generated in your unconscious mind. Now, Dr. Huleng goes even deeper with that. He says, yeah, it was in your unconscious mind, and we don't know what programming kicked it off. We don't know if that was a program from when you were a child. We don't know if that's a program from three generations back from your great-great-great-grandfather. We don't know where it is, but the point is that when it bubbles up in your consciousness, that doesn't mean you have free will. What you have at that point is free won't. You can act on it or not act on it. That's your choice. So a trigger gets gone, gets kicked off in your unconscious mind. You think, oh, I'm going to reach over and get this book. Well, you can veto it. You can say, nah, I don't want to get the book, and you can stop it. Most of the time when it bubbles up, most of us are on automatic. Most of us are like victims, and we just go and act on the thought. Oh, I'll reach for the book. No reason why not. But according to Levitt, that was not free will. It was actually unconscious programming that got bubbled up. Mm-hmm. And in the seminars, I will often ask people, I'll say, tell me your next thought. Tell me your next thought. Nobody can. They can tell me after they think it, but they can't predict what the next thought will be. Well, where are the thoughts coming from? So in Dr. Huleng's world and the whole self-identity, Ho'oponopono process from Hawaii, this is all coming from our programming. And that programming, again, is not just from this life. In their philosophy, it goes back all the way to when we were in the ocean and we crawled onto the sand and started to move through evolution.
Now, a lot of people that are going to be listening to this, they do EFT themselves, and a lot of people work with clients. So it's that practitioner-client relationship.
Yeah.
With this new knowledge about Ho'oponopono, how does that relationship change?
Oh, that's a great question. There's a lot of people that are clients of mine, and I have a miracles coaching program, so I have coaches who are out there working with other people. And I know some other folks who practice EFT, and they're working with clients and so forth. What all of these people are doing who work with people is that they do Ho'oponopono within themselves without telling the client. So if you came to me or somebody listening came to me and I was teaching them EFT and I was doing EFT with them, I would do the Ho'oponopono process within myself. I'd notice what I was feeling. I was noticing what they would say. And I'd be cleaning it within me. Think back to how Dr. Huleng did it with the patients in a mentally ill hospital. What he would do is these patients are there. He did not tell them what he was doing. In this case, he didn't even go and talk to them. But he was aware of their problems because of their charts. So all he did was work on himself and what he was feeling. So if somebody's sitting with me and we're doing the EFT and they're a client, and they start telling me that, oh, they had a traumatic experience and it's bubbling up in them right now and they're trying to tap it away. Well, it's now in my awareness. So it's part of what I've created in my reality. So I feel what I'm feeling and I say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, and I love you. I say it silently, not to the client, and I'm not even talking to myself. I'm saying it silently in a prayerful way to the divine. Because I want to clear my awareness of it and my concerns about it in me, trusting that as I clean it in me, that patient will get better.
Wow, and not even patients, but I'm thinking right now when friends call or family call.
Oh, yes,
yes.
Yeah, wow. I do that as well, and that's a great observation and a great reminder that if somebody calls me and they're upset, well, for example, I went to a funeral yesterday. And the guy who was I met there, he had lost his wife, and they had been married 58 years. And this is a very traumatic thing. Any death is, but this was very traumatic for him. And I saw him, and I was feeling for him. I mean, I was feeling the ache in me for him. And so silently, I'm hugging him, and I'm talking to him, and I'm not telling him I'm doing this. But silently within myself, I'm feeling what I'm feeling and thinking, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, addressing the divine. Trusting that as I heal it within me, it is lightened within him.
Wow. In the book, you also talk about finding our gifts. Tell me a little bit about this, about how do we figure out how to channel the divine through us and how to find what we're meant to be doing.
Well, I think I would drop the phrase, try to figure it out.
Okay.
And go with more of what would you do if you weren't concerned about shoulds, and you weren't concerned about money, and you weren't concerned about reputation, and you weren't concerned about right and wrong, or concerned about pleasing or your parents or being approved by others, what would you do for fun? What would you do for passion? There was a line in another book I had read fairly recently, and it said, what would you do if you won the lottery for $17 million and you've already traveled the world 7 times and you've bought 30 cars and you've already done this, that, and the other, and you play with all the toys and bought all the gifts for yourself? Now you wake up one morning and you've done all that. What are you going to do? And each person will have a different answer to that. But that answer is going to come more purely at that point than it does beforehand, because too many people think, well, I have to work, or I have to do something for survival, or I have to take care of myself or my family or my kids or my friends or whatever it happens to be. There's all kind of rules and regulations we put on it. The divine is trying to express itself through us. And for me, it feels like I'm to be an author. I wanted to be an author when I was 16. It's taken a long time to get into that groove, but now I have like 30 books out, and they do very well, and there's a nice following for each book that comes out. I believe that I'm living my calling, that I am expressing the divinity through me, and it's appropriate for me to do it in this way. Well, each of us has that piece, our role to play. I was on an interview the other day, and I was talking about the jigsaw puzzle. I think the whole planet is this great big jigsaw puzzle, and each of us has our little piece. We have our piece to contribute. And if we don't add our piece to the jigsaw puzzle, first of all, we feel incomplete. We feel unhappy. We know something's missing. We're not doing our calling or living our life to its fullest. We know it. We feel it within ourselves. But the bigger thing is the planet knows it because the planet's incomplete. We need everybody to play their instrument, everybody to play their role, everybody to contribute their piece. It's, again, unique to each person, but I think when you look at what makes you come alive, what makes your heart sing, what adds the extra beat to your heart when you think about doing it, that's in the direction of your gift.
And then going off of what you've been talking about before, if you think about that and then you feel any blocks coming up, there's Ho'oponopono and EFT for you.
There's your tools, and both are free.
Yes.
And they work within minutes. I mean, it's what a breathtaking world we live in. We're in the age of magic and miracles, and part of the magic and part of the miracle is EFT and self-identity Ho'oponopono.
We keep mentioning your book, Zero Limits, and you talk about zero state. What is that?
The zero state is where it all began. It is not even zero. We put a word on it to try to make sense of it. Mm-hmm. When I do the Zero Limits workshops, I usually have a great big whiteboard in front of the room. And I'll look at the whiteboard when there's nothing on it, and I'll say, that's zero. That's zero right there. That's the zero state. And then when people start to say, oh, that's the zero state, I'll write it on the board. That's the zero state. And then some people will start to talk about how to get to zero. EFT, meditation, blah, blah, blah. I'm writing that on the board. We are now illustrating the process of how we create programming in our lives. Zero is with nothing on it. Zero is the divine. Zero is emptiness. Zero is no limits. But we start putting our projections, our programming, our thoughts, and everything on it, and suddenly zero becomes a black and dark, or a black and whiteboard, because we've written so much on it. Zero is the essence of life and where we want to return. Zero is love, and zero is the divine. And even as I use those words, I kind of take you to it and away from it.
Right. Can we reach zero in our life?
Yes. My best way of guiding people, and I can do it in a minute here, at least give people a sense of it, is when I ask people to slow down their thoughts, their speaking, everything that's going on in their lives, just slow down. And I'll tell them to notice their thoughts, because we're always thinking, you know, they're bubbling up from our unconscious. And I'll ask them to notice that you can be aware of your thoughts. You're a witness to your thoughts. You're not your thoughts. You are somehow watching your thoughts in your own head. They're coming up, and you're going, oh, that's interesting, and there's another thought. There's another thought. So somehow you're detached, you're not your thoughts. And then I'll ask people to notice their body. Maybe it hurts. Maybe there's an ache. Maybe there's a pain. Maybe you got to stretch a little bit, but you're in your body. Well, notice you have a body, but you're not your body. you can witness your body. You can observe it from the inside. It's like being in a space suit. This is your suit that you're wearing. You're inside of it. Your flesh suit, and you're inside of it. And I'll ask people to notice their emotions. Maybe they're anxious or impatient or angry or confused. There's some, you know, emotions come and go too. Well, that's interesting. They come and go. Well, that means I'm not my emotions. I am separate from my emotions. I can witness my emotions. And then you start to wonder, well, if I'm not my thoughts and I'm not my body and I'm not my emotions, what am I? And that witness, that essence that is observing body, mind, emotions, that is zero right there. That essence is the same in you. It's the same in me. It's the same in each listener. When you go deeper than the thoughts, deeper than the body, deeper than the emotions, and you are behind it all, witnessing it all, you're at source. That's the source that's the same in each of us, and that source is zero.
That's deep, Joe.
Yes, we should probably end there.
I have one last question, though.
Sure.
That was really beautiful. What do the words "I love you" mean to you?
What a beautiful question. The "I love you" phrase is my closest statement to purity of connection to the divine. They're the three words that's the open sesame of my heart that helps me reconnect to my source. I'm making this up on the spot, doing my best to tune in to what that means to me. But when I say "I love you" to the divine, and I really pause and mean it, and I'm directly speaking to the divine like I do it in the evening in the hot tub, I almost start crying. And sometimes I have, because it's taking me to that connection of purity that I think is the awakening state when somebody reaches it permanently. It takes me to a glimpse of it. So it's my three words that takes me as close to the divine as I can get at this point in my life.
Wow, Joe, thank you so much. That was really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And to everyone listening, I love you. And to Joe, I love you.
Oh, thank you. I love you too. You're doing great work. Godspeed to everybody listening, and expect miracles.